Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff and I'm delighted to have you with me today. This is a show that focuses on issues of interest to people with complex medical conditions and disabilities. And a complex medical condition is one where you're dealing with more than one medical specialist. So if you go to more than one medical specialist, you too have a complex condition. And the reason that this is an interesting category is because when that's true, you often wind up managing your condition more than you would have if you just go to your GP and everything is straightforward. But it's possible to do it. It just takes more time and attention. And we get to run the show. Remember, it's like you're the owner of this football team or something. You know, you don't have to know how to score a touchdown, but you do have to know how to hire the right people who know how to score touchdowns and get your team to operate as a team and to work together for your benefit. So that's what we want to help you do here, is enable you to be the captain of that team, be the owner of that team. So let me play you a little bit about our sponsor. This program is brought to you each week by the VHL Family Alliance. VHL is a complex medical condition, and we've learned a lot over the years about how to deal with the multiplicity of professionals that it takes to manage VHL. So let me play you a little bit about VHL, and then we'll be back to talk with our guest. We're going to talk today about recovering from stroke and other neurological damage.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
Thank you, and we hope that you'll explore the VHL.org website, and also to let you know that the last three and more years of interviews on The Powerful Patient are archived at powerfulpatient.org. So you go there to see what else is there and also to replay this show. So today we have a very special guest with us. We have Mr. Sherman Turner. Welcome, Sherman.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. So Sherman has written a couple of books about his life. He's a gentleman of, I don't know, how old are you now, 21?
I'm 70 years old now.
70 years old, so yeah. 70 years young. And he's written three books about his adventures in life. And the one that we're going to focus on today is called Kenya Rehabilitation. So, Mr. Turner, would you mind telling us a little bit about how you got into this business? Evidently, you had a stroke in the 90s. Tell us about that experience.
Yes, I had a stroke in 1995. I was a SBA minority contractor. And I did large construction jobs for the government, trying to make, working for the government, making minority hiring easier and available for minorities.
Right, and SBA is the Small Business Association?
Yes, ma'am, Small Business Association.
And you were in the plumbing business, right?
Yes, I'm in the plumbing business, but the government made me the general contractor. And that made it easier for the government to provide equal opportunity for minorities.
Great, great. And this is in Buffalo, New York?
Yes, I was based in Buffalo, New York.
Right. So now, so you were a healthy plumber and doing all kinds of physical activity as part of your job before the stroke occurred, right?
No, I was always a computer master plumber, and I gave leadership to about like 50 men and about 10 subcontractors.
I see. So you were doing more office kinds of work and training.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and then tell us about the stroke itself, about
the stroke,
the event.
The stroke left me 100% or 99% paralyzed.
Goodness gracious. So this just happened very rapidly, just like bolt out of the blue one day?
Yes, it just happened one day, and then I wound up in a coma when I woke up out of the coma 30 days later. It took me 6 months to realize where I was. And then when I found out where I was, then I found out I couldn't move.
Mm. So where were you when this happened? Were you at the job or at home?
No, I was at home studying for night school, doing my homework.
So you were teaching in night school, or you were taking courses in night school?
No, I was taking courses because the government made me do refrigeration work.
Uh-huh.
So I was taking courses in refrigeration.
Very good. So you had a very active business life going into this. Did you have any early warning that there might be a stroke or something like that coming up? Did you have high blood pressure or other issues?
No, I found out I had all of that afterwards, but I never took a day off, and I never was sick in my life.
Okay, so you hadn't gone to the doctor to get any of those risk factors checked?
No, I never went.
None.
I never went to the doctor because I hate doctors.
But now we know that we can get a handle on some of those risk factors, and if we manage things like high blood pressure, hopefully we never get to a stroke, right?
Yes, because I'm a black man, we really could never afford to go to a doctor, but if I could do it all over again, I would go to the doctor. I would go to the doctor more often, you know.
Right. We often think that if we don't have insurance, then we can't afford it. But in fact, if you tell the doctor that you don't have insurance, usually they'll make a deal with you that you can't afford. So just to make the point, we all need to at least go once a year to the doctor just because. And even if it's $100, then it's money well spent because we get more information about what risk factors we may have to manage. Or we find out that we don't have any risk factors, which is also a wonderful thing to learn.
Yes, well, I came up very poor where we was like on the welfare and didn't have no money, so and no insurance, so all those things basically was not available for me.
I hear you, and this is one of the reasons that we're working to make sure that everybody has access to medical care, because we need access at the prevention point as well as after something happens. So anyway, that's a little academic from your perspective at this point. So let's go ahead and talk about now you're flat on your back. You've had this stroke. You're in a hospital, I'm assuming, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're just beginning to realize where you are and so forth. So tell us a little bit more about how you got from there to Kenya.
From there, when I left the hospital, then my wife left me because I was paralyzed and had no money. And then I was 100% like on my own.
Mm.
So I would try to get out of the wheelchair to walk because I needed something to eat.
Right.
So that was my biggest struggle. And then when I got to the grocery store, I couldn't shop because my legs would buckle. So I know you can't stay on the radio all day long, so I'll speed it up. So
okay.
Then I started taking rehabilitation classes.
Yeah.
And then I went to like 5 different schools because I had to get help to get my memory back because I didn't have like no memory.
Right.
Walking around
right.
with halfway amnesia.
Okay.
Plus trying to learn how to walk and talk again. It was a very
most immediate,
you know.
So your most immediate needs were just doing the very basic things that we all need to do, eating and drinking and all of that, getting around in your own house, and as you say, grocery shopping.
Yeah,
so,
and then I was, and still am, a 50% paralyzed, where I have the use of just half my body, one arm and one leg.
One arm and one leg. So you use a wheelchair or a crutch or what?
No, the other half I walk like a zombie.
Okay.
So actually, I walk like a zombie, like Frankenstein or somebody when you see me coming. You know?
But that's actually an interesting thing to remind people is that even if it doesn't all come back, you can learn how to basically throw that leg that's not responding appropriately, and use it. In spite of that disability,
yeah.
Because your own leg is better than having an artificial leg, that's for sure.
Yes, well,
so
that's
you,
what I
but
do.
You can learn
that's,
to use
exactly
it in much,
what I do.
Much the same way that you would use an artificial leg.
Yes.
Right. So that must have taken quite a long time. And if you didn't have access to insurance, how did you get the rehabilitation?
The doctors suggested to me that I try to learn another language.
Uh-huh.
If I wanted to be able to talk better and to comprehend better.
Mm-hmm.
So then I made up my mind after I left Buffalo State. I went to college and Buff State, they helped me get a lot of my memory back.
Great.
So then when I went to Africa, I met some Kenyan friends in my rehabilitation school, and then I met the Luwu tribe that Barack Obama belongs to.
Neat.
And then I met a couple friends of his, and then they helped train me in Kenya. So
tell us how you got from Buffalo to Kenya. What was it that inspired you? I mean, the doctor said learn another language, but there's all kinds of languages that are more commonly taught in schools in America. What inspired you to learn Swahili and to go to Kenya?
Oh, well, being a black man, I wanted to learn about my roots.
Okay.
So that was a natural fit because of all my life being teased that you're black man and carrying the scars and being discriminated against for being black.
Right.
I wanted to find out about the black people.
Right. And then how did you make the trip? Because that's also an expensive airline ticket, and if you're having trouble getting around, that complicates it further. So, and if you didn't have enough money for insurance and all here, so how did you bridge that gap?
Well, as a plumber, I did have a little bit of savings, and so I spent that to get my airplane ticket. And because when you don't have the ability to learn to walk and talk, people treat you like a dummy.
Mm.
Since I'm not a dummy and not ashamed of myself, I try real hard.
Right.
So, I mean, I would spend my last dollar trying to learn and to make myself better. So that's what I did.
Right. And, so then when you get into basically a foreign country where you don't speak the language, though a lot of people in Kenya do speak English.
Well, when I went to Buff State, I took up Swahili in college.
Okay. So you learned some.
I learned some, yeah. But then when I got to Kenya, I found out that I learned American Swahili, which is different than the Swahili that the people really speak.
Right.
So then, the school, I learned better Swahili.
So tell me, Swahili, as I understand it, and please correct me, is that it's almost like the universal language in Africa? That are there tribes that spoke Swahili historically, or is this kind of an invented language like, what am I trying to say? There's one in the Romance language department, too. Whose name is escaping me, but it's almost like a created language that has elements of multiple languages and that a lot of people can use to understand one another, but it's not what you speak at home with your mama.
Africa, there's over 52 languages.
Sure.
But if you know one language, you can comprehend another language because some of the words are basically the same.
Okay.
So if you know some Swahili, you can understand and you can talk to somebody in another language. But everybody in Africa speaks three or four languages. So when I got there, I felt like a dumbass because I was an American. Are capable of speaking one language. So when you go to a foreign country, you find out how dumb you are.
Yeah, somebody told me this joke the other day. What do you call someone who speaks three languages? Trilingual, right? What do you call someone who speaks two languages?
Oh, I don't know.
Bilingual. And what do you call somebody who speaks only one language? You call them an American.
Oh.
Right. I mean, most Americans don't speak a foreign language because we can go for thousands of miles and get along just fine with English. But in most other parts of the world, that's not true. And as you say, with all the languages on the African continent, there's the language you spoke at home with your mother, and there's the language that you spoke in school or that you hear on the radio for your country. There's been some leveling of language because of the media in the 20th and 21st centuries. And then there may be a foreign language that was brought in by the colonists, whoever the colonists were in that area. In Kenya, there were Italians for a while, too, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Italians and then the British.
And then the Germans were there, too.
And the Germans were there, too.
Yes,
so people in Kenya who are in certain kinds of businesses may well speak five languages.
Yeah, because when I was there, I went to a school in Twapa, which was really the suburb of Mombasa.
Uh-huh.
And the Germans, the Italians and the Germans and the British were there, and everybody speak like four or five languages.
Right.
So the school that I was in, they put me like in the third grade, and
mm-hmm.
So most of the kids there was like 10 and 8 years old, and they were speaking multiple languages. So you were
enrolled in the regular public school for children?
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. Yes, well, they took me in, and they really helped me out, you know, because in Africa, they treat the elderly, they have respect for the elderly, and especially if you're crippled like I was,
mm-hmm.
then everybody really tries to help you out.
Right.
So
there's a lot more of
it's a different environment. It's
Right, but it's more of a tradition of the community takes care of its own, and that families are multi-generational families living together. Is that true?
Yes, like when I went to the bank in Kenya, mm-hmm. the police guard would come and take me and put me in front of everybody else, and he would make sure that they wait on me first. And that I wouldn't have to stand in line. And you can't do that in America. I was telling him, no, I can stand and wait my turn. But over there, because of the way they treat the elderly, it's against the tradition.
Uh-huh, because elders are respected as having learned a lot in their lifetimes that we
yes.
all want to share.
Yes.
That's great. So you were living with a family there?
Yes, I was living with a family there, and they helped take care of me and made sure that I attended the schools.
And how did you make contact with that family?
Well, through the schools. I went in and applied.
Uh-huh. So when you got your airplane ticket, you went to Kenya, and then what was your first contact in Kenya?
Well, the hotel, and then I went in and found a school that I would like to go to, and then I spoke to the headmaster.
Very good. That was very enterprising of you to do that.
Well, if you want to get better, you would do anything just to get better, because I had nobody to take care of me.
Right. Yeah, and that's amazing that they welcomed you, because I don't know if there are very many schools in America where that would have been acceptable.
Would not. I don't think so, because of the way America is. When you're in a foreign country, it's a little bit different.
Right. And we do have a kind of reputation in the U.S. for being a country where you're expected to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, and do it on your own and be self-sufficient.
But then I had the best advantage of all is because I never heard of Barack Obama. But everybody was asking me, do you know Barack Obama? I said no, but I think he's a nice guy. And then everybody basically treated me nice because of Barack Obama.
Very nice, yeah. Because they have an important relative in the U.S., yeah. Yeah, but I think that it's also that feeling that the community needs to take care of its own, and it sounds like they kind of adopted you from being in the U.S. and knowing Barack Obama, that they kind of adopted you as part of their community. Is that
true? Yeah, and then when I went, like, to the gym to train,
mm-hmm.
They really helped me when I went to the gym near the train.
Right, because you needed physical assistance
physical therapy. Yeah.
Right. Right.
So
you didn't have really medically oriented speech training. You just focused on learning Swahili.
Yeah, I focused on learning Swahili, and then I in the mornings, and then in the afternoon, I had instructors with a physical training.
Mhm. Oh, that's great. The trainer that you were working with is someone who was medically trained or was sports trained?
They were sports trained. I had a karate instructor. I had Barack Obama's cousin was my a medical instructor.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a karate instructor, and I had a Kenyan boxer instructor.
And these were all volunteers, or these were people that were paid somehow?
Oh, no, those was all volunteers. I had like about 12 volunteers.
And this was through the school?
No, it was just through the niceness of the community.
The community?
Yeah, you'd be surprised how nice the Kenyans are, and especially